summary of the chapter Teaching Christian Science in Science and Health from page 448. Gordon Brown.
We'd come to the contrast, hadn't we, between the self-righteous, hypocritical Pharisee and the humble publican at the top of page 448. In the one case, iniquity, inequality, and in the other, response to the great heart of love. On line 4, no wicked evasions, therefore. It's in the marginal heading, don't cover up sin. Confess it, at any rate, to oneself, and forsake it. As Jesus says of this, whosoever exalteth himself shall be abased, and whosoever shall humble himself shall be exalted. And so, to sum up this part of the chapter, don't evade truth, because this cripples integrity and casts thee down from the pinnacle. And that casting down from the pinnacle is Jesus' second temptation, isn't it? In Matthew 4. You see, Satan says to him that the angels will take care of him so that he doesn't dash his foot against a stone. That is to say, your integrity will not be crippled if you take up this dishonest position. Line 16. But it isn't true, because our integrity is crippled. We do dash our foot against a stone every time we drop from the pinnacle of absolute Christian science and pursue instructions which are the opposite of Christian science, outside of Christian science, that is to say, outside the absolute. When you do not remain at the pinnacle above the evidence of the corporeal senses, that is, above sin, integrity is crippled. In other words, stay with the high pinnacle sense of the moral and spiritual qualifications requisite for healing. Keep the impress of divine science where the human and the divine are one, where truth uncapitalized does not fall from truth capitalized and become error, but is held in place. That's the thing, held in place by divine love. And therefore, integrity, this sense of unity, indivisibility, oneness of truth and love, that wonderful compound of truth and love again on line 23, that is then maintained. Truth inseparable from love. Truth is love. And this is adhering to the teachings of Christian science and not breaking its rules. It's doing right. Doing right. Not talking the right and living the wrong, which is deceit based on vanity. All this as we come down page 448, not being integral, not being honest. Because the word integrity from integer, meaning untouched, whole, a complete entity, a whole unmixed number. And integral, composed of constituent parts making a whole, lacking nothing, entire, complete, undivided, unbroken moral soundness, honesty, uprightness, unity, a most wonderful word, isn't it? Integrity. Well, on 449, in this way, you free yourself from sin and can therefore free another from disease. This little leaven on your part, this grain of Christian Science, is what will cause the whole mass to ferment and so do wonders for mortals. It will be omnipotent truth at work, because truth, little t, your own being as man, will not have fallen from the integrity, the wholeness of truth, capital T, itself. You wrong yourself most by wronging another, line 7 on 449. One's moral mercury, rising or falling, registers one's ability to heal, 12th chapter, and fitness to teach, 13th chapter. And therefore, honesty and fidelity are the qualities most needed. Yet a higher understanding is required to teach this subject properly and correctly than to heal the most difficult case. Our moral mercury. Nice that mercury, he seems to be like an angel messenger. He's the messenger god, the one who guides and carries tidings. So what we won't do is to let evil associates inoculate us with evil human thoughts. Down on line 19 to 20, that is to say, indoctrinate, impregnate, thrust into us from outside the means of propagation, material propagation. But we'll let virtue be a rebuke to vice. Because if the teacher of Christian Science does not improve the health and morals of his student, then he is a scientist in name only. Now, as we turn over to 450, there are these three classes of thinkers. The first class, well, they're twisters. They're conceited, fact-twisting bigots. In the second class, those who are so depraved that they appear to be innocent. Well, of course, that again is hypocrisy masking lust. But the third class of thinkers are sincere, generous, noble, and they build with solid masonry. That means to say they build on the rock, not on sand, not on the rock broken up into fragments. They keep the text whole and indivisible. And it's easy to teach them Christian Science because they don't play the traitor for place and power. And at the same time, there seem to be three main ways of yielding to the touch of truth, integral truth. Isn't it nice that it's primarily truth that touches us? Not that we loved him, but that he first loved us. Well, the first way is that the yielding is slow, the second through a struggle, and the third, that having yielded, thought being reluctant to admit it. But this yielding to truth involves the very touchstone of science. Marginal heading, line 17. And the touchstone, of course, is the standard. It's the test or the criterion by which to try out a thing's qualities or to try a thing's qualities. The touchstone of science, the stone that comes and touches us. It is, it seems, that both sickness and sin are healed by understanding God's power over them, not our own power. So that realizing this, the Christian Scientist on line 19, who has nothing of his own, for all belongs to God, he's enlisted to lessen evil, disease, and death. That means to say he's enlisted to lessen and overcome the perilous beliefs in life, substance, and intelligence separate from God. Fallen from the pinnacle of integrity, instead of belonging to God in belief, belonging to man. At the bottom of the page, their life, substance, and intelligence separated in belief from God, belonging to man instead of to God, to a separated part instead of to the integral whole. That's animal magnetism. Life magnetized away from God, so that all the evil there is life, substance, and intelligence in firstly matter, secondly electricity, thirdly animal nature, and fourthly organic life. The errors of breakup, which truth, wherein there is no breakup, annihilates in the form, of course, of the word Christ, Christianity, science. No matter, electricity, animal nature, organic life, but rather the word Christ, Christianity, science. Life, substance, and intelligence separated from God, well, that, of course, in the first paragraph there on 451, it constitutes the material world of aggression, oppression, and the pride of power, pride of personal possessiveness. Now, from this, Christian Scientists, whose life, substance, and intelligence is God, they're commanded to separate themselves in order that Christianity, wearing the crown of love upon her brow, may be their queen of life. See, it's at the point of this 13th chapter that each one of us is wearing the 12-fold crown of the first 12 chapters that culminates in the science of Christianity. Generic man, the woman in the apocalypse, is in consequence in the last four chapters our queen of life. So don't start with the letter of Christian Science on line 8. It's science, and think to succeed without the spirit, it's Christianity. Going in at the broad way of the letter, separated from the spirit, leads to destruction. Strive, therefore, to enter the narrow path of life, where letter and spirit are one and therefore deathless. For this is where our heart, our treasure, must be found to lie. Remember, it was back on page 113 in the Science, Theology, Medicine chapter, where the heart and soul of Christian Science is love. that without this, the letter is but the dead body of science. Remember that. So let our hopes and affections be spiritual, bearing the fruits of the Spirit. Line 18. And we find ourselves back to the topic of human will again on line 28, as that which would start with the letter instead of the Spirit, and so have life, substance, and intelligence separate from God. But every Christian Scientist is a conscientious teacher of science, of the science of mind healing, who defends himself, says the text here, from the influence of human will. He's obligated morally to do the same for his students, opening their eyes to error of every sort, especially that which would subtly deceive, that which would be deceived itself, and therefore deceiving. So in this text, human will is related to mental malpractice, on line 26, ignorance, malice, aforethought, the injurious action of one mortal mind controlling another from wrong motives and with a mistaken or a wicked purpose. So don't let human will blast our moral sense, health, and the human life. Now over to 452, and it continues that we must bar the door of thought against this seeming power on the understanding that evil has in reality no power. Incorrect reasoning leading to practical error would be the letter separate in belief from the Spirit. So what we have to do on line 10 is outgrow that old darkness of the human will, etc., and put on the new light. Rebuke error, explain error, explain its nothingness, and so destroy error, line 13. Purify each immoral atmosphere. Don't breathe it in. And then that lovely line about better the frugal intellectual repast with contentment and virtue than the luxury of learning with egotism and vice. In other words, get your roots right. Right is radical, line 18. It's at the very root of things. Know truth, live truth, love truth yourself. And then it can be imparted to others. Wash your own garment clean of conservatism, that is, of trying to conserve the old human will, the darkness of egotism, personal sense, and so on. The science of mind that heals the sick is right talking and right acting. Don't talk rightly, such as repeating the words of this book, for example, line 24, and act wrongly. Find out how radically right one's motives are in order that right motives destroy sinful motives, right practice, right power destroys wrong practice and wrong power. Over to 453, because the same quality of rightness that obtains in mathematics or music, for example, has got to obtain in Christian Science. as understood by the author of this book. In other words, you only really know what is right, what right is, from this book. One has to come to that conclusion. Right is against wrong, is the side of invincible truth, where victory rests, is against error. Out of the mental chemicalization that follows the explanation of truth, capital T there, a higher basis is won. Truth being explained to him, the student is taught honestly to know himself in order to know others and to have the spiritual power to help them divinely and minister to their needs. The need, therefore, is for honest self-knowledge. Knowledge and honesty in the margin. Honest self-knowledge that uncovers sin and in so doing blesses the corporeal man. This is what is meant by working with the right motive. Whereas, on the other hand, hidden sin, that spiritual wickedness in high places, and when that happens, science becomes just a masquerade, and evil is served in the name of good. A masquerade, the wearing of a mask, animal magnetism masked. Remember how Paul puts it, it's in Ephesians 6, that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, that is, physical things, but against mental principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world. It's belief in the psychic unconscious against spiritual wickedness in high places. Really means, doesn't it, against mediumistic priestcraft or a human teacher's personal control of others. I think it's helpful to think there of something that comes in the glossary. It's on page 595, where it talks about holiness and purification of thought and deed alone fit us for the office of spiritual teaching. It's said of Aaron, who of course was Israel's high priest. And on the next page again, the 12 stones as the breastplate of the high priest are the illuminations of spirit, not matter. I think that it's undoubtedly the first 12 chapters of the textbook, don't you, that fit us for the teaching chapter. Must be so. The real teacher wears as his breastplate the illuminations of the first 12 chapters. So that what in fact he teaches is proper individual self-government, God government. Never does he trespass on the rights of mind. Just thinking for a moment of that first row of chapters in the textbook's matrix structure. Across the top there. First chapter, prayer. Fifth chapter, animal magnetism unmasked. Ninth chapter, creation. And 13th chapter, this present chapter, teaching Christian science. Looking at that sequence, what we have to do, we realize, is so pray to have animal magnetism unmasked that we see creation as it really is, namely, all mankind being taught, that is, born of God. Those horizontal sequences are just wonderful, aren't they? So what this God teaching becomes to us over to 554 is the understanding in a degree of the divine all power, destroying fear and planting our feet in the true path that leads to the house built without hands, eternal in the heavens. In other words, leads us to the four-square city of absolute Christian Science. There on line 12, where love is enthroned, and human hate has no legitimate mandate and no kingdom, because there all disguise, every conceivable mask is stripped from error. It's only outside the absolute that error gets by disguised as truth. Within the absolute, error is known to be error, a lie, nothingness, non-existence. Only in the supposititious realm outside that it can work its deceptions and pass for truth. So that on line 18, love inspires, illumines, and designates the way to this house not made with hands, this inorganic, non-sectarian, absolute Christian Science. What we are understanding through all this is, of course, the principle of mind healing, in which the same love for God and man is the incentive for both healing, that's the 12th chapter, and teaching, this 13th chapter. And so love becomes our one impersonal priestess. Line 21, ministering at the altar of truth, the very opposite of personal priestcraft or spiritual wickedness in high places. This patient, motherly, divinely educative love is the perfect Spirit of God, whose perfect work is to move on the waters of mortal mind, according to the order of the 7 days of creation, of course, and form the perfect concept. What is the perfect concept? The house, the body, the man of God, built without hands, eternal in the heavens. And as the manifestation of this underlying, ministering love, your loving care and counsel must, humanly speaking, support the student's feeble footsteps so that he learns to tread firmly in the straight and narrow way. And therefore, 455, his thought comes into accord with the spirit, little s, of truth and love, aided by the letter and the mental argument. But in order to engage in such a service to a student, you have first to be right yourself, or you can't teach him the science of healing. That is to say, you must utilize, as it says there, the moral might of mind yourself in order to walk over the waves of error and prevent, therefore, the beast of malpractice from rising up out of the sea. You must use the energies of mind in your own behalf first and then help others. If you don't, the student will be receiving his knowledge of Christian Science, which is metaphysical healing, from a human teacher, on line 18, who may be mistaken in judgment and demonstration. But if you do, he will be taught of God. Even though it looks to the senses like you teaching him, he will be taught of God. Line 26, and God cannot mistake. You know how Mrs. Eddy once said, when I teach science, it is not woman that addresses man, but the divine principle or soul bringing out its idea by blotting out the belief that otherwise hideth it. What a wonderful sense of being taught of God. And this means that you are fitly engaged in the highest service, worthy of the highest trusts. You're like the angels, a commissioned messenger, spiritually near God himself. That's the angel messenger, because all there is to you is God spiritually imparting himself. As the spirit of truth and love. Back up there on line one. You are not a persona now capable of misusing mental power. You are truth's very own truth. You are love's very own love. You are the word of God voicing itself. And therefore your integrity is assured. It's in the margin on line 30, because the fountain, which is God, is not, cannot send forth both sweet waters and bitter, and therefore you are not and cannot do that either. It's become impossible for you, top of 456, to influence mankind adversely. This, of course, is our great goal, isn't it? Because that is to say, in the margin, line 5, chicanery on your part is impossible. You are not a quack. Teaching and practicing in the name of truth, but contrary to its spirit and rules. You're adhering strictly to the one and only divine principle and the rules of the one and only scientific method of teaching and practicing, and which alone can bring any success. Only one principle, only one method of demonstrating it. And that is to be the principle imparting, voicing itself, and not a persona separate from it, channeling it, being a personal medium for it. Well, this then is honesty of method in the theory and practice, the letter and the spirit of the Christ cure. Line 17, no concessions being made to persons or opinions. This is the morale of truth, little t, in which you must abide in order to demonstrate the principle. As it said in the practice chapter, didn't it? Don't bury the morale of Christian Science in the grave clothes of its letter. The letter by itself kills. Hence the letter by itself is the mental assassin. What you really are is truth itself doing the work. Your truth itself doing the work. Isn't that what Jesus knew? Of course it was. But only if you are rightly using the textbook Science and Health. The bottom of 456. Because in this case, you are being the voice of truth itself. Voicing one principle, voicing one scientific method in which there's no quackery. Now, why is this so? Because Science and Health contains the full statement of Christian Science, or the science of healing through mind, which must be accepted in its wholeness, with nothing out of context, not broken up into disjointed sentences and clauses, some of which appeal to me, and those I'll adhere to, but others don't, and those I'll just ignore or pass over. So on 457, we can see that only in its wholeness is the textbook revealed truth. It is revealed truth when accepted in its wholeness, uncontaminated by adulterating human hypotheses. And it's got no equal anywhere on earth. As the divine light of Christian Science, this book can only do good. It cannot do evil, but it destroys evil. Identified with it, therefore, you can only do good. You cannot do evil, but you can experience the nothingness of evil. And this is illustrated as we come down that page to line, roundabout line 13, by the medieval legend of the shield. And the quarrel between two knights, because each of them could see but one face of the shield. One side of the shield was gold, the other one silver. And one knight said the shield was made entirely of gold, and the other one said it was made entirely of silver, and so they proceeded to fight about it. But in the story, a third knight arrived, and saw simultaneously the gold side of the shield and the silver side, and saw that the one shield consisted of both sides, which were therefore complementary and not contradictory the one to the other. Well, as I think we've said before, gold is the symbol that stands for the sun, doesn't it? And therefore the first commandment, love God supremely. And the silver stands for the moon, and the second commandment, love thy neighbor as thyself. The two great lights, the two great rules, two great commandments. In other words, it's the unison of principle and practice, the absolute and its argument. The point at which proof appears. Remember how the word argument from the root argentum, meaning silver. In other words, all is good. There is no evil. I am the Lord thy God. Beside me there is none else. Working with any other method than this is mental malpractice. And line 17, which is all evil and has got no good aspect, either silvern or golden. And the rule, therefore, is labor in this direct line of fire, and so hit the mark. But don't scatter one's fire, which means to say, don't pursue a vocation other than that of demonstrating Christian Science. Don't pursue a vocation, for example, commending diet and hygiene at the same time as commending Christian Science, and so departing from Christian Science. Don't have two worlds, two vocations. Learn to let what looks like a material one reflect and be controlled by the spiritual one until you've proved that there is only the one. One principle and its demonstration. The application of the absolute to the cure of disease, proving good to be all and evil nothing. Otherwise, top of 458, you're a quack. Because your platform has got two principles in partnership, one good, the other evil. But the Christian Scientist platform, at the end of that wonderful 10th chapter, The Science of Being, is, isn't it, one principle only, one scientific method only. You remember how in our study of the platform we found this single platform with its 32 planks beginning to yield to us the essence of the two sides of that postcard which Mr. Dawley printed, the matrix chart on one side and the science chart on the other. What a shield. Demonstration then rests on one principle and on the Christian Science platform we stand and rest. That's why the platform becomes to us the tree of life. Line 18, whereas quackery with its two principles in partnership becomes the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, or the tree of death. And therefore the great need is to keep Christian Science free from quackery. That's to say, to keep the way of the tree of life. Because in Genesis chapter 3, we remember an angel does this with a flaming sword, which turns every way. It is to say, it's like the shining of the golden sun. So here on line 17, the two-edged sword of truth turns in every direction to guard the tree of life. two-sided shield, now a two-edged sword. Purpose of which is to keep the sword of the serpent, sin, line 20, from making deadly thrusts. That's what a sword does, makes deadly thrusts at the Christian Scientist, the tree of life, or the woman clothed with the sun, who's panoplied in wisdom. Marginal heading there, line 22. She's got on the whole armor of God. That's the way Paul puts it in Ephesians, isn't it? So that the quackery and malice of ritualism and creed, I believe, ritualism in prescribed forms. I believe in prescribed forms. All that gives way to science's higher law, to divine law, down on line 24, which the Christianly scientific man, the Christian Scientist with his one principle, the woman clothed with the sun, reflects. So he becomes a law unto himself, line 24. So how wisely, honestly, and consistently his course is shaped when he thus follows the leadings not of persons, but of the one divine mind. He's going Christ's way, which is the only way. The way of living, healing, and teaching. The bottom of the page, saving mortals radically from sin and sickness. It's the way of Christianity. Line 32. Because it's the way of the Spirit, causing us to turn naturally, that's right, from matter to spirit, making our own the things that are unseen, unheard to the senses. See the marginal heading there, advancement by sacrifice. So that the first step on line 11 in this advancement is the forsaking, sacrificing of worldliness, turning like the flower from darkness to light, in order, secondly, to appropriate those things which eye hath not seen, and therefore gain heavenly riches. 9:6, to have nothing in common with the worldlings, affections, motives, and aims. Remember the way Paul puts it in 1 Corinthians chapter 2. As it is written, eye hath not seen nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him. But God hath revealed them unto us by his Spirit. For the Spirit searcheth all things, yea, the deep things of God. For what man knoweth the things of a man, save the spirit of man which is in him? Even so, the things of God knoweth no man, but the spirit of God, which of course is what man is. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the spirit which is of God, which things also we speak, not in the words which man's wisdom teacheth, but which the Holy Ghost teacheth, comparing spiritual things with spiritual. For who hath known the mind of the Lord, that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. Dear Paul. In other words, mortals are healed not by erring mortal mind, not by false practitioners. Down there on line 28, is it 26? With their willful wickedness, but by resting on the omnipotence of the one divine mind. This very mind of Christ. Now, the false practitioner reference up there on line 20. Understanding the non-abstract science of Christian Science. Divine truth, not guesswork. Divine truth expounded by the theologus. On line 28, the student of divine law. Which means understanding and adhering strictly to the rules of divine metaphysics. Wonderful divine metaphysics, which of course is the very essence of the platform. Laid down in Science and Health. 460, resting our demonstration on the sure, infallible basis of divine metaphysics. Of course, that's the Christian Science platform in the chapter Science of Being. Infallible divine metaphysics where letter and spirit are one. And so we come to the subject of ontology. In the margin, the science of the necessary constituents and relations of all beings, which underlies all metaphysical practice. So that ontology is the practice of divine metaphysics, which rests on the Christian Science platform. Now, the word ontology in the dictionary, the root of it, the root meaning is very nice. Onta, meaning the things which exist, and logi, of course, meaning speaking. How marvelous to think of the things which truly exist, speaking. Ontology, it says, is the science of being or reality, this is in the dictionary, that branch of knowledge which investigates the nature, essential properties, and relations of being. So says the text, our system of mind healing, line 5, which is therefore divine ontology, rests on the apprehension of the nature and essence of all being, on the divine mind and love's essential qualities. Can't we feel the chapter recapitulation, which is based, as we know, on this system of synonymous terms from God as they range from mind to love? Can't we feel it coming closer and closer? Is that which tells us specifically what the constituents and relations of all beings are? Well, let's not forget, when we come to recapitulation, that on line 8 here, the pharmacy of this system of mind healing is moral. while its medicine is intellectual and spiritual, though used for physical healing. Because pharmacy is the preparing, the compounding, the dispensing of medicines. And that in metaphysics would of course be the compounding and relating of the moral qualities, without which there cannot possibly appear the spiritual medicine that heals physically. So what we are doing in all this is to apprehend the truth of being, on line 18, what everything everywhere is truly being. In the case of the author, the grand facts of this truth of being, this science of mind, on line 24, had first to be taught orally from her own spiritual condition, using the meager channel of language and a circulating manuscript. It was what she was that taught it. It was her own spiritual condition that taught, more than what she said. Now, as we know, that early manuscript was called, wasn't it, The Science of Man. It was called Questions and Answers in Moral Science by Which the Sick Are Healed, and which later became our next chapter, Recapitulation, in the textbook. So as time went on, the textbook itself came into being, and former beliefs, the shadow of old errors, down on line 31, were expelled from thought, and what was taught was clear, pure, divine science. And the process we find on line on page 461 is that of proof by induction, the relating of a part to the whole. We admit the whole because a part is proved, and that part illustrates and proves the entire principle. Lines 5 to 7. You see, in ontology, the relating of all beings to all being. Everything related to everything else within the oneness of being. And this constitutes the system of divine science. The presence of a part is the presence of the whole, and therefore has at the back of it the self-proving power of the whole, because no part can ever be abstracted from the whole. That's the nature of the divine system. In its non-superficial depths, line 9, it can be taught only by the morally advanced and spiritually endowed, says the text. It's a matter of the illumination of the spiritual sense, on line 11. Don't we remember in Atonement and Eucharist, back there on page 29 of Atonement and Eucharist, how the illumination of Mary's spiritual sense put to silence material law and its order of generation, and she brought forth a child by the revelation of truth, demonstrating God as the Father of man? Well, you see, we are very close now, aren't we, to that famous paragraph on scientific obstetrics, which comes over the page, on page 463. You see, science, on line 13, in reversing the evidence before the material senses and in furnishing the eternal interpretation of God and man, puts to silence material law and its order of generation. It puts to silence material law and its order of teaching. Because teaching, generation, education, birth are all one and the same thing, spiritually considered. True motherhood, letting the idea be born of God, as in the case of the woman in the Apocalypse, and as prefigured by Mary, that alone teaches. And this, the text now tells us, involves a no on line 17 and a yes on line 20, saying no to sickness helps to heal sickness, that is to unsee it, line 29, and saying yes to sin helps to heal sin, for with sin you must first see the claim of it in order to heal it. Sin must not be covered, that is to say, swept under the carpet, which is just what it wants us to do. It must be exposed. Golly, how the Apocalypse chapter is going to enforce that one. And so the idea of system grows nearer and nearer and nearer as we approach recapitulation. There must be, says the text on line 31, systematic teaching coupled with spiritual growth and experience in practice. 462 then, at the top, systematic teaching, etc., in order that there be a thorough comprehension of Christian Science and rapidity of the assimilation of truth. What is needed, the text says, is adherence to the rules of Christian Science coupled with imbibing the Spirit of Christ. Adherence to the rules of Christian Science coupled with imbibing the Spirit of Christ. No divided loyalty. What truth itself is, not the student's own views of truth, is what matters. Now, to achieve this, abide strictly by the rules. Heed every statement, not just the statements we like, so that we skate over the others, and advance from the rudiments, or what we think of as the fundamentals laid down, using the qualities of self-denial, sincerity, Christianity, persistence. There's no other way. Now, what are these rudiments that are laid down?